Welcome in to a late night recap edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. The Hawks beat the Knicks by 4 points. We get into that and Julius Randle's best offensive game of the preseason to start off this edition of Locked On Knicks.
Then we get into the tightly contested point guard battle. No minutes for Elfrid Payton today, but Dennis Smith Jr. drew a start. Frank Ntilikina closed, and even RJ Barrett got some time at point guard today.
And we finish up wrapping up the rest of this close Knicks loss. Mitchell Robinson, a solid game. Taj Gibson dialed it up from long range again. And Alonzo Trier not playing. We get into all that and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Knox foul from behind. Count it at one. Fisdale
pokes his fist. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives. Oh!
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I'm Gavin Shaw. Across the river is Alex Wolf. A pretty fun game. Vince Carter turned back the clock. He hit like 4 threes in a row at one point. That was a little bit embarrassing, but for the most part, I would say pretty well-rounded performance from the Knicks. They ultimately lost 100-96 in MSG to the Hawks, but pretty fun game, and they certainly had a chance to win down the stretch, Alex.
Yeah, it was like fun, but not fun. Cause the reason it was not fun was that the reason, like, the Knicks fell into a hole again of like 10 plus points, I think, that they got down at one point. And that kind of sucks. And then they had to kind of scratch and claw their way back out again. And that was due in large part to, like, the offense stagnated. The defense was, I thought, for the most part, by and large, like, fairly decent, except for, like, Vince Carter totally gouging them at one point. But, like, all in all, I'd say the defense was actually okay, and the offense was a little more concerning tonight because it was a lot of some of the bad habits that you see with the Knicks of just falling into ISOing too much and not moving the ball well enough and stuff like that. Like, they never really, up until the very end when it almost seemed like they were going to pull off the comeback, I never really got the impression that they were, like, in a position to, you know, take this game, you know, like, actually, like win it. And even when they got the 2-point lead late after making the comeback from being down over 10 points, I still never really got the feeling that they were going to actually finish it, just because it just, like, offense was such a slog in general for them for most of the night.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, in the final minute, like, Frank took, like, a step back three that I was praying to God would go in, but I can't say I really expected it to. Bobby Portis took, I mean, what I would call, like, a ridiculous shot, like a three with a guy in his face early in the shot clock. And it just seemed like there was no real, like this worries me. I mean, I guess depending on whether you care about the Knicks winning or losing games this season, but assuming you're operating from the perspective you want the Knicks to win as many games as possible. Like, I don't know what they're going to do in close games down the stretch, because for as good as Julius Randle is, he's never going to be that true isolation guy that you just give the ball to and totally clear out for, because he's just not a good enough shooter for that. And I mean, maybe he'll be able to get to the foul line, but he's not really that guy. And maybe RJ Barrett becomes that guy by the end of the season, but it doesn't really seem like they have a plan. And sometimes I think it gets a little overblown when people are like, the Knicks don't have a system. I feel like a lot of NBA teams in the modern day and age don't have a quote unquote system, but what they do have is guiding principles. Like, we like to do this, this, and this. And they have a lot of sets and plays to get them into those principles. And tonight, one thing, and I think we're going to talk about this a little, Alex, that I thought was a positive, is they were able to get Julius Randle the ball on the move a little bit. And that seemed like an element, but all in all, it's still not very cohesive. I don't really know what their identity is. And I mean, I think the reason that Fiz never really has an answer for this when, like, the media asks him about it is, like, he doesn't know. Like, it just doesn't seem like there's any plan. And I think malpractice is strong. Like, maybe there's something to be said for a team just being really young and there's only so much you can do with that, but it's a little weird and concerning. I would like to have someone on who's, I mean, just in general, but specifically for this, who's been around the NBA for a while and could maybe give us a better gauge for how abnormal what Fizdale is doing with the offense is.
I mean, I just think that the excuses for the players being too young kind of wears off this year, because most of the young players that you have on the team are, you know, guys that were here last year. So in theory, they should know the drill already. Like, and then the veterans, you know, you expect to be able to come in and learn a system right away and do those sort of things. So, I mean, I do think there's still something to be said for the fact that over half this team wasn't on the team last year, and there was a lot of turnover, and so thus there's a lot of integrating new faces and stuff like that, which is always hard. But in general, I think at a certain point, Fizdale is going to have to, like you said, like, there's got to at least be some principles other than, like, they run a few plays here and there, and then it's just like ISO. And it's like the Knicks don't really have a guy that can just ISO. You know what I mean? Like, and like you said, maybe it's RJ someday, but we're just not there yet. And, you know, RJ's been leading the team in shots almost every single game, and I have no problem with that. But, you know, he's going to have nights where he's less efficient and where they should be able to be like, hey, RJ, we're going to, you know, we're going to divert a little bit from having you take so many shots and, you know, maybe let you distribute a little bit and set things up and actually run some plays. So those are things that I'm going to start, you know, looking for. I mean, Fizdale's this year, just like last year, I'm sure he's probably thinking along the lines of like, you know, oh, well, you know, we're going to treat the beginning of the regular season like extended preseason. And that's fine because the schedule is going to be hard and stuff. And, you know, it's going to be a rough go right at the beginning of the year. But, you know, I'd like to see them start establishing something sooner than later, hopefully.
Yeah, I guess that being said, it was a really good game for Julius Randle. I thought you said this to me pre-show, and I'm in total agreement with you. His best offensive game as a Knick so far, 20 points, 8 boards, 6 of 12 from the field, 7 of 9 from the free throw line. And it just sort of seemed like the Hawks had no one who could guard him. Whenever he wanted, he could just sort of bully his way to the rim and then finish there creatively. I was watching him today, and it's sort of funny how New Orleans just sort of got an upgrade at that spot, because I was thinking this is like exactly what Zion is doing in all these highlights. The only difference is Zion finishes by like flying like 7 inches over someone, and Randle will just bump someone off and lay it in. But it looked like that same type of physicality, and he was just sort of overwhelming for this Hawks defense.
Yeah, he was just taking what he wanted. It was really great to see. I mean, it was like bully ball at its best. It's exactly the sort of stuff that he's supposed to be known for, and it was good to see him just sort of take over and do that. Like, he shot the 9 free throw attempts. I don't remember off the top of my head how many of those were off of and ones, but it was a lot. I mean, it felt like almost every time he got in for a layup, he was just like looking for contact, like just to be like, okay, hit me, because you're not going to do anything to me, and I'm still going to finish the shot and, you know, get my 2 points, and then I'll take the extra one too. It was just honestly like the exact sort of performance I think that you signed him for. The only thing that I would have maybe liked to see a little more of, but the situation just didn't dictate it, is the assist number to be up a little bit. But it's not every night that he's going to dish like 7, 8 assists or even like 5 assists. You know, there's going to be nights where he only has a couple, and, you know, tonight he only had 2. But, yeah, and it's not like he wasn't also like running the break like we've seen him do. Like, I freaking love that he grabs the rebound and just immediately starts the break. Like, that's going to be legitimately one of the funnest parts of this season, I think, is just watching Julius Randle run the break with these guys.
Yeah, it's nice how seamless it is. And another big who had his best night for the Knicks so far is Bobby Portis, 16 points, 7 rebounds, 6 of 12 from the field. I thought, as I noted earlier, a poor decision on that final shot, but overall very efficient. And this is sort of why he had a market this offseason, despite the lack of defensive ability and some issues with consistency and the fact that he's never really been on a good team. I mean, the guy can score, and he can score pretty efficiently. I still have some questions on how he fits with the Knicks. And I personally, I know this is the preseason and Fizz is just trying stuff out. I'd much rather see Mitchell Robinson in there down the stretch, but this was pretty clearly his best game, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say so too. Thankfully, like, I felt like he wasn't chucking quite as much as that first game, you know, the last game, where it was just like every time the ball touched his hands, he had to put it up at the hoop. I still don't think he was perfect in that regard, but at least his shot selection was a little better. And he was doing some useful some useful, like, off-ball things. Like, he made a couple really nice cuts at different times, and he was taking, like, open three-pointers and stuff like that. So I would just say in general, I mean, I don't have any, like, super strong opinions about Portis from this one. I mean, I guess I'll say, too, like, on defense, he wasn't as much of a sieve either, which was kind of nice. He was, again, not perfect on that end, but he was at least passable. The last game, he was pretty horrific on defense. So in this one, I just say it was an improved game all around. I mean, if we could see something more like this out of him, hopefully as the backup rather than the starter, because, you know, long term, you want Mitch to be the starter, obviously. But if you could see something like this out of him going forward, you know, that's pretty solid production for Portis, and, you know, makes him viable as, like, you know, your backup 4 or 5 guy.
All right. With that, let's take a quick break, come back in. I'm excited to get into the point guard battle, because I thought we got some good intel tonight with it being Dennis Smith Jr.'s first full game back, and Frank Ntilikina having some moments down the stretch. That next on Locked On Knicks.
Hey, are you in the New York area and looking to promote your business to a young, predominantly male demographic?
Then Locked On Knicks is the podcast for you. 80% of our listeners fall between the ages of 18 and 44, and 98% of those listeners are male. As the top Knicks podcast on the market, we offer a unique opportunity to engage with basketball fans in the city.
If interested in an ad spot or live read, email lockedonknicks@gmail.com for more information on pricing and availability. Our rates are very affordable compared to radio and offer a chance to reach an audience on an ever-growing platform. All right, welcome into the second segment of Locked On Knicks. I'm Alex Wolf. He's Gavin Shaw. We are breaking down now the point guard battle, probably the most interesting positional battle that the Knicks have going on. Yes, Mitchell Robinson got sat for this game, but I don't think there's actually a battle at center so much as sending a message to Mitch. Really, the only spot at this point that I think is up for grabs based off of the lineups that we've seen in the preseason so far is the point guard spot. So Dennis Smith came back from his back injury. He drew the start, actually, in his first game back. He managed to stay on the floor for all of about 2 minutes and picked up 2 fouls. So Frank Ntilikina got subbed in. So more or less, Frank got the start in this game, even though Dennis was the one to get it on the stat sheet. Smith ended up with a little under 21 minutes. He shot 1 of 5 for 4 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists. 3 turnovers, probably not what you'd want to see out of him if you have high hopes for him, and I'm certainly one of those people. So not the most encouraging result, but he also looked like he was pretty rusty from that injury. And then you had Frank Ntilikina played, honestly, almost the exact same amount of minutes. He played 20 minutes and 46 seconds to Dennis Smith's 20 minutes and 56 seconds. Frank shot 1 of 4. Only had 2 points, but he also had 3 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. And down the stretch, I mean, you could argue earlier in the game he was whatever. Frank himself got into foul trouble a little bit to start the game. Like, as soon as he came in, he got 2 fouls pretty quick, too, but Fizdale just left him in. But, like, down the stretch, he D'd up Trae Young. He blocked him on one attempt. He stole an inbounds pass on another. There was another exchange where he got a offensive rebound and found Bobby Portis streaking to the hoop for a dunk. So, I mean, there was just a lot of those nitty gritty Frank Ntilikina plays that don't necessarily show up in the box score, that he made down the stretch of this game. And in my opinion, at least, it was the main reason that the Knicks almost were able to pull this one out. So Gavin, I don't know how you're feeling as far as those two go before we even get into our third guy, which is RJ Barrett, who got a little bit of point guard run today as well.
Yeah, even as a noted Frank lover and DSJ hater strong, I'll say disliker, I'm kind of going to give DSJ the benefit of the doubt, because he just looked all sorts of out of it. And if he is 100% healthy, he's certainly not there mentally, because you could tell he just wasn't playing with his signature explosiveness. Didn't really try to even go to the rim much, looked lethargic for the vast majority of the night. And I don't know. I feel like from his side of things, you can't take away too much from tonight, other than the fact that, like, I didn't think his jumper really looked any different than last year, which was a big disappointment. And maybe that changes the more reps. I mean, the one shot he did hit was like a 20 footer, but outside of that, I mean, just looked really awkward on two threes. And what really stood out to me was he got one kick out where he clearly had time to shoot a three ball, and he just sort of waited for the defender to catch up to him and then didn't. And now that could be because of the lingering injury, and he might just be, not all that confident in the entirety of his game. But what it seemed like to me was he still doesn't really have any faith in his jumper. And it didn't, like, not to say that he wasn't working this summer, but it didn't feel like a guy who had shot thousands and thousands of jumpers this summer, where you almost get to the point where just total muscle memory and you just fire it right up. He just seemed super duper hesitant. Frank, his one bucket was a thing of beauty, took Trae Young right off the dribble. And again, as I always say with Frank, at a certain point, he just has to make shots. But outside of that, I thought he was spectacular today, made some really smart passes, including a lead ball to Julius Randle for a big dunk. And then defensively down the stretch, I mean, he was the heart and soul of this Knicks team. I mean, I thought he was the reason they had a chance to win it, totally locking down Trae Young, had a great block on him. And then the play after that, I thought might have even been better, where they set a double screen for Trae, who was really pretty excellent for most of this game, trying to free him up, and Frank got around one, and then the second one, Trae, like, got ahead of him, and he'd been doing this thing all night where he got guys on his hips and would just put a floater in, and Frank, using his length, was able to catch up, sort of discourage Trae from shooting and force him to pass, and I just thought both those plays just totally showcase what Frank can be defensively. He had another block in transition. It just shows all facets of his game. He can be a lockdown one-on-one defender. He can be someone who's good enough to recover in transition. And he can be someone who's just fundamentally sound enough to just discourage opposing point guards from even trying to shoot the ball. And to me, that, I mean, all that summed up why he is so important. And also at the same time, it's clear why people don't think he's very good, because you really have to look closely, and this isn't like a basketball like purist and saying, oh, I'm watching the game closer than you are thing. It's more so just you just sort of have to take the time to really appreciate what he does defensively, and if you don't, I mean, it would look like he's not that good of a player on the surface level.
Yeah, I think we're gonna probably have this discussion more than once this season, but I feel like there's like going to be discussions nonstop about the viability of, like, if Frank's offense doesn't come around, can you still have him be your starting and, you know, closing point guard? And I think at least based off what we've seen so far about what the lineup construction is going to be with this team, I think you could probably have him be your point guard if you have RJ Barrett, Marcus Morris, Julius Randle, and Mitchell Robinson out there, because realistically, like, between RJ, Marcus Morris, and Julius Randle, I mean, they're gonna take more than enough shots on their own, and you know, those are the guys you want taking the shots anyway. That I don't think it's necessarily gonna matter if Frank can't really score as much, you know, this year still. And I mean, this game was like proof positive of, like, when he's fully, like, locked in and engaged defensively, and he seems to, like, really have a vendetta against Trae Young for some reason. He just eats his lunch every single time. And, you know, if he's locked in at this level on defense, there's nobody that can even come close to matching him on the Knicks. And, you know, potentially, as far as point of attack defenders in the league, there's not going to be too many better than him when he's at his best. So, I would definitely say that, like, I think this could work. I don't know if it's ideal that his offense doesn't seem to be coming around, but I do think there's a chance that you could start Frank and it would actually work out.
Yeah, I mean, I've been arguing that for a long time, so I don't even need to say anything more on it. I'm trying to – was there – I guess we should talk about RJ Barrett a little bit, because he did play some minutes at point guard, which was fun to watch. And at least in my mind, I mean, I have no need for Elfrid Payton to be in the rotation, so I didn't mind that at all. My suggestion last episode was in a similar lineup. You have Alonzo Trier in there with him, and those two share point guard duties. I would still like to see that. Trier, and we'll get into this next segment, sort of inexplicably didn't play at all tonight. But, RJ was, he was good as a creator. 6 assists. 12 points, 7 rebounds. As you noted, not his most efficient scoring night, just 4 for 14 from the field, but did have some good moments, had this nasty in-and-out dribble in the first quarter, and he just blew by a guy. And we heard that someone tweeted at me when I was ranting about his lack of athletic ability and how he has no athletic metrics that he, like, low-key has, like, the James Harden, Luka Doncic, like, super elite deacceleration. And that was sort of the first time this preseason when I saw it. So I guess all things considered, a pretty good game for him. I mean, my complaints with him are the same as always. He needs to hit open threes. He missed three of them tonight, and he just has to continue to get stronger and a better touch around the basket, where I thought he's been pretty good for the most part this preseason. Tonight he missed like four or five layups that should go in for him.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to have nights like this. I mean, he shot 4-14 for the night. That's not great, but you're going to have to live with those nights, you know. But I thought that he did a great job when he was, you know, tasked with being the point guard. He had a couple passes where I was like, man, that was pretty bad. Like, there was one in particular that stands out to me where he ran a quick pick and roll with Taj Gibson, and Taj literally just had his defender fronted, like, the most basic possible play for a big man possible. And RJ threw it, like, 2 feet above his hand. And I was like, dude, where was that pass going? What were you expecting him to do? But other than that, like, you know, he ran a really good pick and roll with Mitch at one point and tossed him a lob, which was great. In general, I thought he looked pretty comfortable with being kind of the primary facilitator out there, which is good to see. Like, that's, we've talked about before, but ideally you would want that facet of his game to come out a lot. You know, if he's going to reach the highest possible level he can reach in this league. So it's good that they're kind of getting that into him early. As far as letting him create for others. Also, like, I know he cooled off pretty significantly throughout the course of the game, which I might add, you know, we've been talking about this since literally the first game. He played almost 40 minutes again today, which is stupid in a preseason game. But Fizdale seems content to just run the wheels off of every rookie, just cause they're young or whatever. But, I did love his finishes early in the game. Again, just showing, like, his body control and his ability to finish through contact and stuff. Like, he's legitimately already a good to above average NBA finisher, which is pretty damn cool, because that's certainly been an aspect where a lot of the Knicks, like, guards and even to some extent forwards have struggled in the last couple years. So it's a great trait to have for him.
Yeah, especially, I mean, you look at it in contrast to where Knox was when he came in last year, and it's just night and day. Like, he's so confident around the basket. And I want to see a larger sample size, just because I still wish his touch was a little bit better, not just on jumpers, but around the basket. But all in all, I'm in agreement with you. All right. Let's take one final break, come back and go over the rest of the Knicks. Next on Locked On Knicks. All right. Third and final segment. What else stood out to you in this one, Alex?
You know, there wasn't, like, anything too revolutionary other than what we've talked about already. I did like that Mitchell Robinson had kind of a bounce-back game in a way. He only played not quite 18 minutes, but he was efficient. He was 2-of-3 for 4 points. He had 5 rebounds and a steal and 2 blocks. So kind of your standard low-minutes Mitchell Robinson amount of impact, but the blocks look good. He wasn't, I mean, he only had zero fouls. He had zero. I was going to say I was expecting to see, like, he had one that I forgot about, but no, he had zero fouls, which is exactly what you wanted to see. I thought he looked a lot more disciplined, than he has the first two games. And obviously in particular the last game when he got in foul trouble so quickly. So yeah, I just kind of enjoyed the bounce back there. Also Kevin Knox came back, which was pretty cool to me as well. I mean, Knox had sort of the same thing that RJ had to an extent. He came in and he was feeling it early when he first got in. Found Mitch on this, like, awesome little, like, pick and roll that was kind of delayed. Like, it was nice. Like, it almost looked like Knox was going to turn the corner, and then, like, at the last second, he just bolted it to Mitch, like, right at the hoop. That was really nice, and he had a really nice kick out to Julius Randle in the corner, I think it was, for a three. That was nice as well. So, like, his passing was on display. Even if the scoring wasn't quite there, he shot 2-of-8. But he did have 11 points because he got to the line 6 times. So, pretty solid game, I'd say, for Knox as well. And I think his impact was definitely felt out there.
Yeah, you can just see he's a more mature player. Like you feel him on the court when he's not hitting shots in a way you didn't last year. He just has to figure out exactly what his role is on this team, because right now it's sort of amorphous from game to game, and it's kind of hard to tell what exactly he's expected to do and whether he's just supposed to be a pure scorer or someone who shoots off the catch or someone who attacks and creates. And I'm interested to see, obviously, that will sort of naturally sort itself out with time, but I think he's one of the bigger victims of just the glut of scorers on this team. I mean, to me, the thing that stood out, and unless I missed something and they announced it pregame, I still can't understand what the deal is with not playing Alonzo Trier and like having him like banished, like obviously limited minutes in his first game. Second game, I think, I can't remember, did he only play the fourth quarter or only played the second half? And then this game, he doesn't play at all. Like, to me, like, this guy is, I mean, just as much as Knox and only slightly less than Mitch and RJ, like, an essential part of the Knicks' future. And I guess you can argue Fizz just knows what he has in him, but you could say that about a couple of these guys. And it's not really an excuse for not playing him. So I don't really get it. And I'd be frustrated unless there's an injury we don't know about. If he's just out of the rotation to start the regular season, that wouldn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I'd say like ordinarily, if this is like the regular season, I'd be like, oh, he must be in Fizz's doghouse for some reason. But I mean, Fizz even said about Payton, like Elfrid Payton didn't play a minute in this game. And Fizz even said, you know, right after the game, like, oh no, we just want to see what we had with Frank and DSJ today, but he'll be playing again in the next game, which is disappointing, honestly, as someone who I would rather watch Frank or DSJ play all day over Elfrid Payton, but it is what it is. But I wonder if, you know, it's like you said, maybe that he just kind of knows what he has already. Also, Dotson was available tonight for the first time this season, and he didn't get any minutes, despite, like, Dennis Smith came back from an injury and you know, immediately got the start. So that was a little intriguing as well. I do hope, I mean, of all the players that were on the Knicks last year, Dotson and Trier were two that really showed, like, they could potentially be, you know, decent players on a decent NBA team. And that was pretty rare on last year's team, like, to have that sort of quality for sure. So I do hope that they're not, like, in the doghouse already and, like, you know, not going to get playing time right from the word go this season for whatever reason or another.
Yeah. I'm just going through it. I mean, there wasn't really – I don't know how much else we have to talk about. Gibson was good again.
I was going to say, I just continue to be impressed by Taj Gibson.
He's nice. I can't believe how old he is. Like, he feels like he's still, like, 29.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and legitimately, like, if you look at his stats for his career, he's, like, actually gotten better the last, like, 3 years. Like, he's just kind of, like, getting better with age. He's, like, fine wine. Now, apparently, he's, like, a knockdown three-point shooter. Like, he shot technically 1 of 1 from three, but had he not towed the line by mistake, he would have been 2 for 2 on threes today. I do wonder to an extent if maybe we're looking at a Noah Vonleh effect, though, where he's going to start the season off on fire from three and then, like, drastically cool off after a couple games. But I guess we'll see. But all in all, like, I love his contributions. I think he's a really, really good player and definitely a good vet. So I continue to be impressed by him.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, I think with that, we can wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. We got RJ against former Duke teammate Cam Reddish tonight. And then on Friday, we're hoping they both play, potentially RJ against Zion. Zion makes his MSG debut in the wrong uniform, assuming the Pelicans play him. I hope they just throw him out there for a couple of minutes. That should certainly be exciting. After that, more fun stuff on the docket on Locked On Knicks. Perhaps an interesting, unique announcement from us in the next week or two. We'll let you know about that on Locked On Knicks.